G on behalf of Eric S. versus Health and Human Services. Justice Frydenberg has rejoined the court and will be present for all of the remaining cases of the day. With that in mind, Mr. Fair, good morning to you.
Good morning. Court. I'm Randy Fair. I'm the attorney for Donna Sandberg, Eric Sandberg, the appellant in this case. I ask this court to reverse the decision of the district court, talking specifically with regard to the fact that I believe it to be a testamentary trust established by the will under paragraph 5. Look at all of the provisions that were required under the will, that testamentary trust that was created by part of that will. Remain the same, all of the provisions. What's interesting is HHS takes the position that it's not a testamentary trust, and yet every time they talk about what are the parameters of that trust itself, they have to examine the will itself.
So if we talk about the parameters of the trust, for the court to discern what that is, do we look to the will? Do we look to the will and the party's agreement? Or do we look to the will, the party's agreement, and the court's order?
I think in this particular case, when you talk about the manner in which the trust itself is monitored or maintained, clearly only look at itself under paragraph 5. It's forth how it's handled, provisions when it talks about shall provide, but it's in the utmost discretion of the trustee. It sets forth the fact that by Sandberg, the parent can't be the trustee, bank must be dictated policies. Receive funds, full and maintenance of 30. Under paragraph 5.4, it indicates that there can be a separate share established when you have someone who's a minor or under disability. Looking strictly at the provision of the will in order to determine as a trustee what you're doing. The trustee's not looking at court order. The trustee's not looking at anything other than the will itself, because the will sets forth what the provisions are. Document. So in this case, the only thing that happened, truth be told, is that because of the nature of particular pragmatic differences between the cousins, they set up and split off 25% of the total estate value that was going into the trust for Eric Sandberg. 75% went to the cousins, three other individuals who were flat. While Mr. Sandberg lives in Perkins County.
Were any terms changed?
No, none whatsoever.
So just divided the assets?
Correct. Would have been our preference to change the terms. I would have much rather have someone who's a lot more flexible with allowing funds to go to Mr. Sandberg. That wasn't allowed. Bank? I think if you look in the just how the trust was even set up. And you look at, I know they point to, the court even points to, well, it was named something different. But look at paragraph 5. There's nothing particular that says it should have been named Lois Branting Trust, which was the actual grandmother. Certainly, I agree that if those amounts are dispersed in typical Health and Human Service fashion, they would be considered and then benefits. But I think in this case, he should be eligible. I think it was clearly a testamentary trust. It's not set up through any other trust or similar to a trust as you normally would in estate practice. I think it was created by the probate court that was determining what the will says, determining the beneficiaries, determining what should take place, simply splitting it up for purposes that made it easier to take care of with regard to these individuals.
In terms of splitting the trust, and I'm just going to use your vernacular there.
Sure.
The parties were relying on 30-24,124, correct?
Correct.
Were the provisions of that statute followed precisely in this case? And if they weren't, what's the effect of that?
I can tell you, right off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you. This was something done by the personal representative. I came to the case. So the personal representative, because there was not one of the trustee, personal representative, attorney for the estate, drew up this agreement, filed, eventually submitted to my client, who then brought it to me for purposes. So it was really a submission to probate court to follow through with and determine it appropriate about it.
If you disregard the agreement and you focus solely upon the trust established by the will, is it a support trust, a discretionary trust, or some combination?
I think in this case, if you look at the Pullman matter, it's clearly just simply a discretionary trust. Testimony, the only evidence before the hearing officer and the court itself, by Mike Moser, who's the trustee on behalf of Adams Ranch Trust, states, it's my discretion. I can choose to do so at all. If you look back at the Pullman matter, which I rely upon, in that case, I think even there was some a provision. I know the district court judge has, well, there's a requirement because it says shall distribute, etc., under the complete discretion of the trustee. But in the Pullman case, I think it even had the same provisions with regard to that. And I think some of the discussions that were had by the court were on appeal were, well, can they invade the corpus? Can they get to those matters? Look at the trust itself and the will and the way that the trustee determines it, that it's completely at their sole discretion. We have no right to demand anything out of it. It's the only evidence. There's no other evidence that we could get funds. But frankly, if you determine, okay, it's not, it's something we can demand, we can turn around next week and demand to have the money in full. And that's just not the case. That's just not the practical manner in which it's being handled by the trustee. Compared to the Pullman case, there were a number of questions with regard to how you would get to those, but even though it was said shall, was modified by complete and unfettered discretion with regard to the trustee. And I think it's clear, if you look at the will itself, I think it's paragraph 5.3, that it talks about 5.2. It indicates that if there's any monies that are not distributed as part of the income that the trust makes itself, is to be put back into the trust if the trustee, under his discretion, decides not to distribute. So it's our position that it's a customary trust in the manner in which it's established, clearly discretionary trust, not only with the language itself decided by this court, but also based upon the testimony of the trust. Our position that attempt to give us the funds.
If the court were to conclude that it's a discretionary support trust, what's your strongest argument that the beneficiary here can't compel a distribution from the trust, can't compel the trustee to distribute funds?
The simplest thing is the trustee says, I have to go back to court to force it, because the language of it is clear. Just because it says shall, but it's under the discretion of the person. We have that type of language all the time that occurs in law. Someone is told, go do this, but it's your choice as whether or not to do it. Well, the trustee looks at the circumstances or even looks at it and says, you know, I've already given you some money previously this year. I'm going to give you nothing for the rest of the year. There's nothing in the trust language or the will itself, which is the trust language, that says you can force him to give you the income off of it. Guaranteed the minimum amount allowed under any sort of taxing purposes or gifting. Nothing that allows us to set forth a particular amount, nothing that allows my client to receive any funds in any descriptive language that says you're guaranteed this amount. A lot of times in support trusts there are language that says you're guaranteed you're going to get the income, but we're not going to allow you to pay the corpus or the principal. In this case, there's nothing that allows for any of that in any sense.
Can the language be read to say that the trustee has discretion as to the amounts that might be dispersed, but the shall means that the trustee has an obligation to provide something for the support, care, maintenance, general welfare, and so on?
I think that's what the court determined does can be read or interpreted in that manner. The trustee said not, it's his discretion.
Well, could you then bring an action saying the trustee misunderstands the trust documents and compel a distribution.
I could certainly bring an action, but it's not going to be here. It's going to be back in a completely different court. So I guess in that sense, if your decision is yes, it's something that we can compel, then I'm probably going to take that decision and run off to do so. But again, at the time that we were in front of the district court, in front of the HHS hearing officer, that wasn't available because it was, frankly, myself, my clients, and trustee that anything. And quite frankly, if we do compel something or get something, it would include his income. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Gilbride, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Ryan Gilbride. I'm an assistant attorney general with the state of Nebraska. I represent the appellees in this matter. The Sandberg Trust fails to meet the requirements to be an excluded resource under the Medicaid regulations for purposes of determining Medicaid eligibility because the trust is not a special needs trust. There is no special needs trust in any of the documents that are in the record.
What do we make of the fact that the parties' agreement referenced the importance of special needs provisions and the probate court approved the parties' agreement and ordered everyone to follow it? What do we make of that?
I think it's an interesting question, Your Honor. They created a separate trust for Eric Sandberg, be separate from the other beneficiaries, in order to have a support trust set up with special needs provisions, but they didn't include that language in the trust set up just for Mr. Sandberg. There is no Medicaid recapture clause in any of the documents regarding the trust, whether it was the initial will, the agreement, the certification of the trust from the trust officer, or the court order from the probate court.
Mr. Gilbride, assume for a moment that there had been no agreement to divide the trust, that we're just operating on the will and the will alone. Would that be an excluded or included resource, and why?
That trust would be available for purposes of determining Mr. Sandberg's Medicaid eligibility because that trust did not include a Medicaid recapture clause. That is the reason.
Would the entire corpus of the trust be available?
Yes, I believe that's why the parties agreed that it was necessary, that something else had to be done, go into probate court, separate the trust so that some of the funds could be protected so they would not be considered available under Medicaid regulations. And however, they created the separate trust, they didn't put a Medicaid recapture clause in the trust. So when you go in to apply for Medicaid, look at the Medicaid regulations, you have to have that language that has a Medicaid recapture clause, and if you don't, the funds have to be considered eligible to be used for Medicaid.
Assume for a moment a testamentary trust that says, I give to my grandchildren so much of the principal and interest as my trustee in his or her sole and absolute discretion determines is appropriate, and upon the death of the grandchild, it goes to someone else. Under your interpretation of the Medicaid regulations, would that be an includable resource?
I think under that situation, Your Honor, that might be a trust that would be protected from Medicaid.
So even though it didn't have the magic words.
Well, in this situation, that's a testamentary trust. This wasn't a testamentary trust.
What?
And we need to have the magic words in it. But when it's a testamentary trust, I think that's different. This wasn't a testamentary trust, and it needed to have a Medicaid recapture clause.
Doesn't your argument turn on what happened after death, in other words, this proceeding in the county court? If there had never been that proceeding in the county court, none of this would have been a resource. Isn't that correct?
There was no Medicaid recapture clause, but it was created as a testamentary trust.
I think Justice Castle's question is saying, is this correct, limited to the will?
Right. If, when there's a testamentary trust created that is purely discretionary and absent anything else, you don't have to have any magic words about Medicaid recapture, do you?
Well, under the scenario that you put forth, I think that would be the case, but in this will, there was the word shall that required the trustee to take a look at, for example, the medical needs of the beneficiary. And when you look at even just that will, in this case, it's a little different than what the court laid out. Because when you have the use of the word shall provide for the benefit of, and things like medical support.
But that's not what it says. It doesn't say shall provide for the benefit of. It says shall from time to time be necessary or appropriate for the support. And then it has the discretionary language. So this is a little different, isn't it?
Yes, I think that's why the district court found, and I agree, that this is a hybrid of the two different kinds of trusts that were considered, the discretionary trust or a support trust. And under the Smith case, we have a situation where the trustee, in good faith, would have to compel a distribution if it were to help the beneficiary with needed medical care. Like in this situation where we have a beneficiary who has cerebral palsy and needs to be taken care of in the home. And when you're applying for Medicaid, and that's a situation where you can compel distributions like that, you need to have a Medicaid recapture clause. So in the event that the beneficiary passes away or the trust goes away, that there is a mechanism for Medicaid to recapture any potential funds that would be in there.
Should a Medicaid recapture clause be read into the provisions of this trust, given the procedural history, the party's agreement, and the court's order approving that agreement?
No, because you need to have that language to enforce that. If in this situation the beneficiary, Mr. Sandberg, were to pass away, or the trust were to go away, and it's no longer there, and there's still funds in the trust, I don't see how the state of Nebraska could go and try to get Medicaid that was dispersed, recaptured under the certain trust. You have to have that special needs language, the magic language, for the trust to be considered a special needs trust under the Medicaid regulations when you're applying for Medicaid. And so I would say that the type of trust that was created is a question of law. And that is for the court to decide, because the parties do not contest the terms of the trust being unclear or contrary to the settler's intent. And so I think
who's the settler in this case?
Well,
who
that's
or what?
A good question. I believe that the settler is it was determined in probate court, and there was agreement reached by the parties, so the settler would be the beneficiaries of the original Branding Trust. The settlers would have been the representative for Mr. Sandberg, I guess, that created these trusts specifically for Mr. Sandberg, the Eric Sandberg Grandchild Trust, Your Honor. So that's why I believe that when you use the word shall, when you created that trust, that required distributions. And if there's distributions that are required for Mr. Sandberg, if he needs them, which in this case he will need distributions for his medical care, then that trust required a Medicaid recapture clause.
If, as you argue, the wording of the trust presents a question of law, then doesn't it follow that we owe no deference whatsoever to the district court's determination of what type of trust it was?
It's a question of law. It's for the Nebraska Supreme Court to decide.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What does it mean for the trustee to have sole an unfettered discretion, but there also to be a shall? What does that look like practically? What is the trustee obligated to do? What can the trustee do? I think those two terms could be seen as somewhat contradictory.
I agree, Your Honor. I think that's why the district court found that this was a hybrid trust. And there's two things we know about this trust. The way it's set up is that the state of Nebraska doesn't have any way to recapture the Medicaid funds, and that it was set up solely for Mr. Sandberg. So it doesn't make any sense that you would go in to the probate court and separate a trust just for Mr. Sandberg so that he couldn't have any of those funds And the state couldn't have a Medicaid recapture clause so that when there's the application for Medicaid, the state can't get any Medicaid reimbursed for it to be a special needs trust charter.
So could the phrase that shall, am I in the right spot here, shall apply such part, blah, 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 of this trust as shall from time to time be necessary and appropriate? Could that be if it's established that it's necessary or appropriate?
Well, I have the language here from the certification of trust. It says, during the terms of the trust, the trustee shall apply, and then it goes on to say that if there's support, care, and maintenance needs of the beneficiary, that's Exhibit 8 from the administrative hearing, Your Honor, I think that that indicates, just like the district court found, that if it can be shown that the trustee should make a distribution for the support of the child, they can compel it. And they have to do it in good faith under the Smith case.
You would concede that the certificate can't change the legal meaning of the testamentary trust under the will. A trustee has no power to change the terms of a trust, does he or she?
The probate court entered the order that changed the terms of the trust.
Well, now you're talking about something different. You were a moment ago talking about the certification from the trustee.
Yes.
The trustee can't change what the meaning of the trust is. If he certified it, it's all available. It doesn't matter what the trustee says, does it?
Trustee is the one who distributes the funds, so I think he would, ultimately the trustee would have to do what was under the probate court order, Your Honor. So, and under that order, we'll go back to the will, and it says shall make the distributions if there's a medical need necessary.
So ultimately, you agree with me, it turns upon the language of the trust.
Turns upon the language of the trust, and I think the trust is a hybrid discretionary trust under that language.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal.